someone else's journey is our lesson.
We used to say, the difficult we do immediately, the impossible just takes a little more time.
Someone else's lesson is our gift.
I believe part of our responsibility is really to equip and inspire our students to ask those difficult questions.
Be encouraged by the stories that lift us all.
I came to Howard because I wanted to be the President of the United States.
Somebody saw something in me, and it's my duty to be that person for somebody else.
Now, join Dr. Wayne Frederick, President of Howard University, and his guest on The Journey.
Armed with his faith, a dream, and determination, my guest today battled naysayers and health challenges to finish his degree at the Howard University School of Education. He was selected as one of seven top graduate students nationwide who intends to make school superintendency a career. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest is Dr. Walter C. Lundy, a 2016 graduate of Howard University. Welcome.
Thank you.
You were born in Petersburg, Virginia.
A small town on Central Virginia. It's about 20 minutes south of Richmond, Virginia, on the I-95 corridor. I grew up in that city with a single parent, but a strong education system, actually. And as the eldest of three, supported my mom, stayed focused on education, had a strong family network, and was able to, you know, set some high goals for myself, and here I am.
And your mom was at Virginia State University?
Yes. Yes. Oddly enough, I was the first generation to go to college. And while I was in undergrad at Virginia Tech, my mom decided to go get her bachelor's degree from Virginia State. She actually went back to get her master's before I got mine.
Okay.
I joke that says that she says that she's going to pay for college tuition. It might as well be hers.
That's excellent. So what made you decide to go to Virginia Tech?
Strangely enough, it was a financial decision. I actually, my top choice, believe it or not, was Howard University. Mm-hmm. I came for a visit, and the financial aid package didn't work out the way that it did at Virginia Tech. And at the time, Virginia Tech had very dismal numbers of minority students, and so they were handing out scholarships. And coming from modest middle class single parent home, the decision for me and my mother was kind of easy to go with which one was most affordable. And so Virginia Tech was that choice.
And you did English as your major there before doing you also had a BA in public administration as well. But you then went to University of West Alabama University, where you pursued a master's in education, special education administration specifically. Why that choice?
I went into the business route because I thought I was going to go into government and politics. But then once I graduated, I got involved in education. And the reason why I ended up in special education for a master's, my younger sister is autistic. And I pretty much have been raising her since she was little, and to this day, with both of my parents being deceased, even though she's an adult, she will always be my baby sister. And so I take care of my sister, and so I've always had a huge place in my heart for those who cannot advocate for themselves, and for those who cannot speak up for themselves.
No. You then came to Howard University, and as we stated earlier, in May 2016, you graduated with an education, a degree, an ED, a doctorate in education leadership and policy studies. What do you intend to do with that type of an education?
Right now, I'm torn. When I came into the program at Howard, I really wanted to bolster my pedigree so that I could be a viable candidate for being an urban education leader leading to the school superintendency. I really wanted to be in the leadership role where I could help reform urban education. But funny thing happening along the way, being at Howard University and the mentors that I've had here, particularly individuals like Dean Fenwick, they've taught me the value of telling the truth and telling the story. And so research has now become a big part of my passion. Right now, while I know I want to be an urban education reformer, I also want to do research, and I also want to make sure that I tell the story of those underserved and under-resourced groups in our society. And Howard has taught me that we have to go out and tell that story, and we do it through the numbers, through the research, and through the facts.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Dr. Walter C. Lundy. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. So, you know, based on the fact that you clearly are committed to making sure that we get the facts out there, we change some of the dynamics. African Americans have made significant strides in education, in closing health disparities, etc. And I really believe that some of those things have a basis in some policy changes that have been made around education. The gains aren't good enough, I would agree, but they are significant. Last year, a greater percentage of high school graduates who were African American enrolled in college than their white counterparts. What's your perspective? Is the glass half full or is it half empty?
Well, I think that I would clearly say that the glass is half full. Because, you know, because I think a part of the struggle of African Americans is that we cannot always tell a story from a deficit perspective. We are a resilient people, and that we have overcome enormous challenges and obstacles. Are we where we want to be? Absolutely not. But for our own morale and our own inspiration and hope, we have to say the glass is half full, because we have achievements. We have a long way to go, obviously, but as long as we stay on that path of social justice and serving those who are underserved and under-resourced, I think we're good. So that, to answer your question, I believe the glass is half full, but we have to continue to always monitor that glass, making sure that it's rising to the top.
Do you think our educational system needs to really start using technology in a non-traditional fashion, and that maybe the bricks and mortar classroom that we've set up for K through 12, given the socioeconomic challenges, may probably need to be a thing of the past?
Well, it's not probably need to be. It has to be. You know, the schoolhouse, you know, education model is gone. And as we know, pretty soon, most of the children will be black and brown in America. And so therefore, the workforce that will be providing the backbone of a technology-driven economy will be people that look just like you and me. And they have to be prepared. Whether it's at the high school level and specific career and technical programs, or whether or not college programs, but we have to rethink how we educate and how we teach, starting with early childhood education. We have to infuse STEM models into all that we do. It can't be an add-on. It has to be embodied in how we do our work, and so we have a difficult task. Because it's going to require investment. It's going to require investment by the government, by the states, to make sure that our children have the latest state-of-the-art technology so that they can be the workforce that this country will need.
Absolutely. Now, just to switch gears a little bit, your journey and your path wasn't simple.
No.
You've had your own challenges. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I've been battling health challenges due to birth, and I'm lucky to actually to have lived this long and be here. I was born with heart deformities, and presently, as of today, you know, I have a heart that only pumps blood at about 27%. So my heart is not optimal. I've had open heart surgery twice, six vessels bypass. I usually wasn't able to talk about this, but I now see it as a badge of honor and courage. I also have inside of me both a pacemaker and a defibrillator in case of resuscitation. But those have been sources of inspiration and motivation to know that I believe in God, and God says that I'm giving you these things because there's work for you to do. And so I need you down here doing that work.
And you're a young man, so these challenges have afflicted you, you know, at very early stages in your life, and therefore had to be impediments to your education. Obviously, your faith is strong, and that's one source of it. For our listeners who, you know, sometimes may be concerned or thinking about the challenges they have, how do you use and leverage your faith to ensure that you can push on and drive on as you have all this way already?
Yeah. So, you know, for me, it's that answer to that question is easy, because that high power that I believe in has shown himself to me. I have seen the benefits and the rewards of committing myself to a life of service, to committing myself to my fellow man. And so I have always felt and believe that a way will be provided, even in the most difficult and darkest hour and times. And trust me, they've been there. Mm-hmm. But my faith has given me the ability to squash the element of doubt. It's okay to be afraid, and it's okay to be concerned, but you can't let doubt overtake your hope. And so faith has been that inspiration for me. It's been the fuel to, you know, for me to even raise my expectations of myself, as opposed to having a defeatist or believing I have limited ability. I believe I now have unlimited ability and possibilities. And so that's what my faith and spirit has done for me.
My mentor, who is a cancer surgeon as I am, often says that one of the greatest gifts you can give to another human being is the gift of hope. Because with the gift of hope, you've granted someone the anticipation of tomorrow. And that anticipation of tomorrow, it comes with a wide variety of possibilities. As you think of your career going forward, what are some of the possibilities you would like to see brought to the education system in America that would allow for decreasing disparities in how African American children are educated versus their Caucasian counterparts?
Right. So, and I've given this a great deal of thought, and I owe it to the amazing professors in my program here at Howard University. I think that there has to be a change in mindset. You know, we say as a society, we believe that all children can learn, but we have different approaches and different models and different levels of expectations. One, the first thing that I think that the education system has to do is that we have to address the elements of those who are victimized by social elements in our society. You cannot separate. There's a reason why in politics education is on the same agenda with unemployment or with security and defense, because it's a political issue. And so you know, until we correct the social ills and the under level of resources in minority communities, you cannot disconnect the two. Education is, people say education is the way out, or education is the solution. I believe that, but also it doesn't absolve society of correcting the other issues that affect our communities and our families. There's this amazing YouTube video that shows that when children do not read in the summertime, how they regress, and then by the third grade, the children who are mostly black and brown are already 4 to 5 levels behind in reading in the third grade. And you think high school reform is going to fix that? If way back in the third grade, you were already 4 levels behind your counterpart? And so we have to attack the problem. We need to put more investment in early childhood education.
I appreciate those remarks. Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Dr. Walter C. Lundy, clearly a foot soldier for change. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne Frederick. on the Howard University Radio Network.